Welcome to the Game of Thrones podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Game of Thrones on HBO. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking, we just watched Season 7, Episode 5, titled Eastwatch. Aaron, what'd you think?
Eastwatch gets a fucking Clockwork Castle. Casterly Rock doesn't get a Clockwork Castle. Highgarden doesn't get a fucking Eastwatch by the Sea gets one.
Maybe it's going to be more important in those places.
I do think it's probably more cruche to the show watcher that they get that piece of geography right.
Or kind of
like the visualization of the location. I thought it was good. I can see the things that the people that are going to hate this episode are going to hate about it. And like I share some of the concerns, like there's like some just really loosey goosey stuff happening.
With
people's motivations and trying to get things maneuvered into the final scene, and it was pretty distracting at times. I felt like I was getting the cliff notes or like the weird you know, it's movie's 3 hours and it's on ABC Sunday night, and it's 3 hours with commercials, so you know they've cut stuff out, but you're not sure what.
Right, or it's the Dark Tower, and they're trying to do it in an hour and a half.
There you go. It felt very sketchy in places.
It totally did. I think this also, I enjoyed this episode a lot, but this is the first time I think that the shortcuts they're taking with everything have started to get to me.
Yeah.
This is the first time I felt like, man, I wish they would have just done a season 9.
Yeah.
Like, I don't necessarily want all of these shortcuts. Like, I thought, in particular, that Jaime Tyrion scene should have been a little bit longer, and we should have seen why Jaime was convinced, why Jaime would ever listen to this guy who killed their father.
Yeah.
They really don't go there. They just simply have him tear up and say, "Do you think I wanted to be born like this? No. Now listen to me."
Yeah, I think that scene needed to breathe. And it's just some of the stuff in the staging, like... I think it's they did such a great job of showing where on the battlefield everything was happening last week that this week when Bronn and Jaime are like 3 miles from the battle.
Yeah, it's a vicious undertow there.
The only seeming answer is because they needed it to be like if Jaime and Bronn had been captured along with all the other troops, it'd have been game over. They'd have been burnt to death or they'd have bent the knee, and they're not ready for that. So we needed this magic undertow to carry them away.
Uh-huh.
It's that kind of stuff. It's
and then the heist scene, like where George Clooney and Brad Pitt and all his goons are standing around planning their heist. Like, how are we going to get Cersei to believe us? Well, I've got this skill. Oh, right. You've got that skill? I've got this skill.
Yeah.
Maybe we can all come together and open the bank vault.
Yeah. And then, you know, so there's the things I don't know if are working or not, because I thought Arya was a little strong on Sansa, you know, with the like the whole like, oh,
yeah,
well, you're just wanting as soon as Jon turns his back or drops his dick, you're going to be all over him.
Kind of surprised me, given their relationship, like that I thought it was sort of cordial last episode.
Yeah, it felt like they're reverting right back to their archetypes from before. And then what I feel like is happening is Littlefinger is using this note, which is the one that Sansa was coerced to write back to Winterfell when Ned was in, you know, he's a traitor and he tried to betray King Joffrey and all this. You expect it to be something incriminating to him. This is incriminating to Sansa. Because out of context, Arya reading it, like, you know, I mean, we were pissed off as show watchers the fact that she was just ready to carry the Lannister water like this. And again,
yeah,
clearly she's coerced and she's paid the price for it, but it's going to look bad to Arya. Now, the thing is, that's what the showrunners want us to think. But when I see it, I'm like, this has been several years. Arya has gotten a lot wiser. If she lets Littlefinger bamboozle her like this, I don't know what I'm going to do. She thinks she's bamboozled Littlefinger. Yeah, I do too.
No. I mean, she thinks she's bamboozled him, right?
Oh.
Like, she thinks he's
unaware of her. I'm hoping she sees through this. Because just the way it was staged, I don't know. I just felt very, like, this is not a master sleuth and sneak. And, I don't know. I
didn't have problems with that.
Oh, really?
No, I sort of liked that. Although,
Do you think the Littlefinger? Do you because I watched that, I actually rewound it to see what was on the scroll to make sure. I thought, you know,
I did too. Yeah, I had to pause it.
And then I thought that on her face there was something knowing about, like, I'm being manipulated by Littlefinger. He's trying to, or this is kind of juvenile. I don't know. I'm hoping that's okay. What it is, because if she comes crazy at Sansa over this message, I'm gonna be like, oh my god,
yeah,
this is gonna feel tedious, because I feel like Arya should be smarter than this,
right?
And she should suspect the double play, underhanded stuff from Littlefinger.
From that guy, yeah. Certainly. If this was Jon doing this, perhaps not.
But I'm not sure, because I also would believe, because the double Ds have been kind of tone deaf on these characters, I would totally believe that they're just going to have this stupid drama between the two sisters, too.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you another thing I'm not super thrilled about, fucking Cersei being pregnant.
No? Why not?
I just, who cares?
I don't. Jamie cares. Like, that's like, the important
here's
thing.
Here's the thing.
I'm not even sure she is pregnant, honestly.
I don't know what to think about Jamie Lannister, the character in this TV show. I have, like, I truly don't know what the hell is going on in his mind in any one minute. And I'm not getting enough. I'm not getting enough of him actually talking his and speaking his actual mind. But because it's like when he tears up, it's like, is he really happy about being an acknowledged father? Like, it seems like it.
I don't know about the acknowledgement part. I think he's happy to have another son with Cersei, or daughter with Cersei, either one.
Yeah.
Another child with Cersei. I just don't. I don't know. I mean, he's clearly different from the books. He's a very different person from the books, but I don't go in, I guess, with that baggage, so I don't really see it as much of a problem.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Maybe it is the all, because I think that some of this stuff is just kind of I think the way he's being written is something you don't have to have be steeped in the books to kind of be like, I don't know if this feels authentic anymore, or like, I don't know, like, what I'm supposed to be thinking about this guy. Is he in love with Cersei? Is he afraid of Cersei? Is he wary about Cersei? Like,
yeah, I'm waiting for the breaking point, honestly.
Right.
And I've been waiting, and I feel like I can't wait too much longer. Mm-hmm. I don't think he can either.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that I do like about this episode, though. Mm-hmm. I'm just probably going to jump around a lot, but I guess Sam is just the guy who steals things and leaves now.
Right.
Like swords, scrolls, he's got it all. Right.
I think there's going to be a lot of people pissed off that he stole his father's sword and there is nothing.
There's nothing to do about it.
There's nothing to come of it. There's nothing.
Not yet. Right. I don't know. I didn't see him tuck it away in that cart.
I'm just saying,
with him.
You know, his mom's not going to ride up and demand it from him.
No.
I'm just saying that, like, there was no comeuppance or any kind of, like, character moment. It hasn't even been acknowledged that that was something that was done by Sam.
Yeah.
I also, like, here's the thing. Like, the thing where Gilly is reading fucking Prince Rhaegar's annulment from Princess Elia. I'm telling you, it's this fucking close.
Yeah.
It's this fucking close.
And Sam dismisses it immediately as...
Right,
as,
I mean...
Or not even dismisses it, but just doesn't listen to it.
Yeah.
Because it's mixed in with 15,000 shits.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm like, that's... This is almost... this is like waving a red cape in front of a bull.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how they thought it was going to be taken, but it feels like... It feels a little bit like mockery.
One part that was a little...
I mean,
it was obviously fan servicey. I was going to say the Gendry stuff.
Rowing, yeah.
I didn't have a problem with that.
I didn't either.
I thought it was a nice wink to all the people who are on the inside.
I think there's a fine line with, like, wink, oh, we're all in this together, and wink, like, we know something you don't know, and fuck all, you know, like that.
Yeah, yeah.
It just felt a little, like, it's a fine point between, you know, fan service and winks and poking fun and not respecting your fan base's time and attention.
Yeah.
And I feel like there's a couple places, I don't think it's intentional, I just feel like they continue to be a bit tone deaf about this kind of stuff.
And they also have Jon petting the dragon in this episode, which reinforces that idea.
Yep, the fact that he's got some kind of special Targaryen blood.
Mm-hmm.
Probably like Tyrion, because Tyrion did the same damn... I mean, so now are they, like, openly wanting us to...
They're the dragon riders, I guess.
I mean, that's...
The three of them.
It seems like that there's three people who have petted the dragons and lived.
Mm-hmm.
Daenerys, Jon, and Tyrion.
Yeah.
I don't know. Also, seems like that really impressed the hell out of Dany.
Mm-hmm.
don't know what she wanted to get out of charging John with Drogo.
Right.
Drogon. But
I'm not even sure she saw it with his giant head in the way.
Yeah, I was. Cause
like,
it's
what
like,
is going on down there? John, what's happening?
I thought that Danny POV where she's like literally trying to get around his neck frills to see what the hell. Oh, he's your pet. I wouldn't go with the nose.
Yeah.
He doesn't like a hand inside his nostril. That's he's tolerating it because he likes you, but that's
yeah. I can't
that's
even
really
imagine.
A dragon faux pas.
Like in battle too.
Yeah,
that head's just gonna be bobbing everywhere. Yeah. You're not gonna be able to see a damn
and
thing.
And when it belches flame, forget about it.
Right.
Forget about it. You need welding goggles to steer this guy.
Make sure you got a clear view before you
also,
shout Dracarys.
Can I say that I didn't have a real problem with Dany roasting Dickon and Randall Tarly.
Oh, like Tyrion?
Like, they wanted this to be some monstrous thing, and I'm like, well, she says, kneel, you shits.
Yeah.
You know, or die.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't know. I thought Tyrion was... The outrage that he felt was a little out of proportion to what actually, you know, happened.
Yeah, I think it's that he sees the potential writing on the wall here with Dany. I think that's the thing he's worried about, right? Like, okay, this wasn't the step too far, but he sees that step too far coming.
But these aren't traded. These, like, again, like everything that I mean, I saw more evidence that maybe she was bloodthirsty in the previous episode than this one, because holding the commanders of the men who will not recant their views responsible,
yeah.
Like if they got some sweetheart golden handcuff deal, then that would be again more stuff that's more of the same. I felt like they didn't do a very good job of getting me on the side of like Tyrion of like, oh man, she's a you know a slippery slope towards this Mad Queen business. I didn't feel it. I felt like she was entirely in control. There was no like anger or malice.
Yeah, it's almost like they're setting up her to be the antithesis of Sansa's view, right?
Yeah,
of like you know Arya's encouraging her. You know, you got to bring the hammer down, the great hammer, on somebody's head.
Oh, yeah.
And she's like, that's not how you get people to work together.
Yeah.
So in as much as we believe that, I guess we have to believe that what Dany is doing is not, at the very least, not very smart for the cooperation of everyone in Westeros.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm with you. It's not, I was not super bothered by it, whereas Tyrion seems to think it's like close to the last straw.
Yeah, yeah. I mean... I guess like is getting roasted because like if they were beheaded because it seemed like he was upset that they were going to get killed at all.
Mm-hmm.
But what are you going to do? I guess I don't know what you do when you've got a noble. It's such a weird situation because in the books, like if you like Jaime gets captured, you try to ransom him to Tywin,
mm-hmm.
or you exchange some hostages or whatever. But when you take the heads of a house. Who are probably the de facto lords paramount? Like, who the fuck do you Cersei? You go to Cersei to try to like,
yeah.
But it seems like Danny's like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to take prisoners. Like join, like this join me or die business has got me here. I'm going to dance with it until it stops working, and it continues to work. And that I tell you what, that scene of like all the Lannisters bowing before Drogon on that hill, like it's something out of Night of Bald Mountain, was. Awesome.
Yeah. No, the thing that I really noticed about this episode is they seem to have disregarded like any concern about the cost of something at this point. Like they want to show an awesome right. scene.
The only thing that's too expensive to render is Ghost.
right. He's
Drogon
up there.
Drogon can get his 30-second money shot on Dragon Hill, as it will be called forevermore.
Right. No, but I'm loving like the special effects, the stuff with Bran flying all those ravens up north to get the look on the White Walkers.
Did you get so? Why do you think that they were showing like the different eyes of the ravens going milky on and off?
Oh, were they? I didn't notice it.
I got the idea that they were trying to suggest that Bran was simultaneously warg, but you can't like simultaneously warg that he was essentially revolving through this entire flock of crows. To
why
keep
would
them
he do that?
Because like, he wants a whole flock.
How
I don't
many
know.
Fucking crows
that's
do you
true.
Need to
how
see
many
something?
That's a good question. But I got the idea like they were trying to suggest how powerful he was because he was like essentially time-sharing his mind across all these crows.
Right.
But then you didn't get that, so maybe I'm wrong. But I couldn't figure out why they kept on showing
this is
the eyes go milky and clear, milky and clear, milky and clear.
Yeah. I actually missed the first time through where the hell John was going, so that's the nature of the instant take.
Yeah, yeah.
Discover why critics are calling Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes the best film of the franchise.
What a wonderful day!
It's a jaw-dropping spectacle that demands to be seen on the biggest screen possible.
We need to go.
Hang on.
It is our time.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes, now playing only in theaters. Rated PG-13, some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away. And I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, the very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
What else do you want to talk about? I mean, there are a lot of returns, right? Like, Jor returns to Danny's service. Gendry returns, which I thought was... Yeah, I'm like, okay, he just went back to King's Landing? Okay, I guess so.
I mean, it actually works. The logic that made sense. I like the fact they made
Hammer. When he pulled out the Great Hammer, yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah, yeah. When he's got, and it makes so much sense. The fact that Robert Baratheon is famous for his Warhammer and just crushing fools to death with it,
and we never got to see it because Robert was old and fat.
Yeah, I could see it, and this guy has been, he's a bastard born son of the king, but he's a blacksmith, so he's hammering all day every day, building up them hammer muscles. So like, yeah, when he's got, it's like, yeah, they're much good sort of. I know this, and then I also thought it was really cool that the fact that they showed him caving those gold cloaks face in with a little bit of fancy twirling and riposte. I thought that was pretty good.
That was awesome. And I really love that scene with Davos where he's trying to bribe these guys away. And he does it. It works. He's awesome.
Yeah,
Davos. Tyrion fucking walks up. God damn it, Tyrion.
Davos is the Han Solo of this show, right?
I think he was super,
even though he's like, oh, I'm a smuggler, not a fighter. Like, he was really, he was just really cool in this episode. Like, you know, deftly navigating Flea Bottom, paying off the guards. Like, you know, he's got the gift of gab. I like how he was like, speaking of Rush moments, I thought Gendry meeting John, like where like it made Gendry seem a little desperate and cringy to be like,
our
dads were best buds. We should be best buds. It's like a weird funhouse version of Theon. Like, whoa, pump the brakes, kid.
Yeah, that I felt like maybe the actor went a little too intense.
But, you know,
with his eyes and his breathing.
There's a director there to be like, pull it back.
Probably the director should have said maybe down one notch. Like, take it from 11
or
to 10.
Here's the thing. But, like, I feel like that maybe this is something that maybe it could have used some more time to breathe. Maybe he listens to Davos and sticks with this story, and then over, you know, a couple of days worth of voyaging to Eastwatch, him and John kind of bond, or like I don't know, but it just felt like everything happened like too quick. It was very, very accelerated.
I love the basic idea of that scene, though.
Like, yeah, no,
that these are two men whose fathers were best friends,
right?
And now they're meeting, and
it can happen again.
Yeah,
and I think that. I'm actually super surprised Gendry's came back this late to play what it looks like, just from the dialogue, a pivotal role, because now I'm kind of expecting him to be kind of like that Robert Baratheon figure. Mm-hmm. Although maybe he'll just be cannon fodder. You know, they're building him up in our minds, so it'll hurt when he dies inevitably.
Yeah. The one person I'm pretty sure can't die right now is Tormund.
Yeah.
Because we literally have no other connection to the Wildlings at all.
Mm.
And if he goes, in my mind, the Wildlings go.
Yeah, did you notice there's like the big seven, and then there's like there's like four or five red shirts that don't even make it out of the tunnel before they pan off of them onto the main. It's kind of like, it'd be like Lord of the Rings, you know, it's like Gandalf and Aragorn and Legolas and Boromir and Gimli, and then those fucking hobbits.
Right.
Like, it's like, you know, the music turns into kazoo, and it's like they just fast forward through the hobbits. Like,
yeah.
I don't know who these red shirt wildling hobbits are, but they gonna die.
They are.
Don't get
sure.
A tat. Don't look up their names. Don't print any Teen Beat, Tiger Beat posters of them. They gonna die.
Yeah, and I guess
I don't need a production leak to tell me these dudes that do not get names on their credits, they're going to die.
Oh, for sure. No lines. They hardly got their faces on screen. Blurry.
And Tormund's like, you know, we've got we're prototyping this new armor. We've dyed it red because reasons. And
Speaking of armor colors, I'm really, really glad that Jorah got the all black everything memo before he showed up with Danny.
Yeah.
Because he showed up in all black. Let me say, I have one more thing to say about this episode.
Okay.
And then I'm done.
Okay.
We'll see what you got left over. It was surprisingly anticlimactic for me. I expected with a name like Eastwatch that we were going to see some shit go down at Eastwatch.
We saw.
And I kept looking at the clock going, there's 10 minutes left. Maybe the last 10 minutes will all be battle.
And
I just kept looking until there was no more episode, and I'm like, fuck. That was a letdown.
I think they've done – so I don't know why they did this, but they sure built up a lot of expectation that every episode is going to be like a Blackwater Battle of the Bastards-style epic. And there's been certainly two episodes that's had that energy to it, but – I mean, it's completely natural after you have a bonkers episode like last week that you have to kind of take your breath and get reloaded, and you know it's very hard to maintain. There's very few things like, you know, Mad Max Fury Road, the John Wicks, the Fast and the Furiouses. It's very hard to maintain that kind of over the top action, and certainly when you do it, the story suffers because all those things have in common very basic.
Right.
This thing happens over here. Hero goes over there, kills everybody in the room. Something over here happens. Like, there's very little plot beyond there's...
But we're doing that already anyway.
Yeah.
So at least give me that 10-15 minute scene of badassdom.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I guess it's so weird because, yes, it is a little anticlimactic, but also I felt like it was still oddly rushed. Like the thing with, you know, the maester sitting there and arguing over that, and like the fact that Sam is just a fresh acolyte and he's going to, like, at the big table, just going to interject.
Yeah.
And that didn't feel right.
Yeah, I think if he hadn't cured Jorah, I would be calling total bullshit on that. But
right,
the one maester there has respect for him at least.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. And but I don't know. It seems like he's pushing it pretty hot. Also, what do you make of this plan to capture a white and bring it down south?
I think this is the stupidest thing I've ever
heard. Doesn't it sound like why yeah. if. I don't understand why Danny and John just don't take Drogo up there and be like, do you see this hundreds of thousands of dead men marching deal?
Uh-huh.
See? Real. If you want to, grab down and have Drogon grab a handful of these guys.
Sure.
Fly him back, throw one clawful on King's Landing, throw the other clawful on Dragonstone, and everyone that needs to be convinced will be convinced.
Uh-huh.
Like, done. Done deal.
Yeah, you want to use your dragons anyway.
Right.
Come on.
Right. Why are we sending, you know, our biggest badasses with very little escort?
I also think it's a plan that just plain doesn't work. Cersei doesn't give a fuck. If anything, Cersei's going to say, great, that's one enemy that's going to sandwich you between us.
So he's essentially trying to convince Dany. And I just don't understand why. At this point, like, what would hurt Dany to just go up there with their dragons and check it out?
Wait, he's trying to convince Cersei, I thought.
I think it's Dany, because Dany...
But then what's the whole mission with Tyrion to Jaime, and Jaime going to Cersei and saying...
Oh, no, he's... Okay, there's two things happening here.
Okay.
One is that Dany is trying to be like, hey, let's sign this armistice, this ceasefire, so we can all jointly face this army up north. But I don't know. I felt like that getting the proof was as much for Dany as it is for Cersei at this point.
I just don't think it's going to work.
Yeah.
Like, I mean... Sure, it'll work. It maybe will work for Dany, but I feel like that's the worst thing that could happen to Dany is her to be convinced and Cersei to not give a shit.
Yeah.
Because then Cersei holds up in the castle and waits for Dany's armies to get slaughtered, for the Dothraki who fight for sport to get slaughtered by the White Walkers and dwindle their numbers, and now you've only got an army of 10,000 dudes to their 10,000.
The other thing about the Dothraki is I feel like they're going to be useless up north anyway.
Yeah.
Like, they have... no cold weather clothes at all.
Yeah.
They're running around in muscle shirts and cargo shorts, flip-flops, essentially.
Yeah.
And honestly, the Unsullied don't either. Mm-hmm. These are warm weather equipped troops. But here's the thing. Like, as I'm raising this concern, I can see a podcast through, you know, in the future where I'm trying to backpedal and like, well, you know, I guess the Double D's, they need a Dothraki up there, and probably in the books they'll be the epic sheep shearing of the winter of, you know, the 302 AC and low many sheep gave their lives to outfit the Dothraki and their snuggly parkas.
See, the problem,
but they're not going to do it on the show, and I'm going to look like a fucking idiot because they're going to be Dothraki in leather vests up there. Oh, la, la! And beheading White Walkers left and right.
Yeah.
And not getting frostbit dicks. So, I shouldn't invest that much in it.
Also, there aren't that many black sheep to go around, and they can't wear white, so.
I mean, couldn't they? Like, maybe that'll be...
No, not with Danny's
crew. After the Long Night Part 2 Electric Boogaloo, it'll be the White Brothers.
White Brothers.
And they'll be all in their snuggly cotton parkas. They'll be white as snow. They'll no longer be the black crows.
I don't know. I mostly enjoyed this episode. I think there was a lot to like, but a lot of shortcuts taken, and felt a little anticlimactic given the name for me.
Yeah, and I know that's there's a lot of shortcuts taken. It's hard to say what you'd do better because number one, we don't know what the rest of the season's going
to
be.
I give this thing another fucking year. George isn't going to beat you to the finish line.
Right.
Just take your fucking time. You're making millions of dollars off this thing. Take your time.
It's my impression that this wanting to get it done in 8 seasons is more a Double D thing than an HBO thing.
Yeah.
which there's been, you know, like there's it's funny. It's just like this, like we joked about in a preview cut. There's like a fucking nerd civil war going on in some of these subreddits where someone started an article last week that's essentially been my thesis for a while that like, hey, you can't play in the double D's because they didn't sign up to adapt fan fiction.
Sure.
And like people were fucking up in arms about like, well, nobody's making them like, you know, do the rush job now. And it's not, you know, it's like George didn't put a gun in their head and say, you got to get this out in 7 or 8 seasons. Like this is the. But on the other hand, like, you know, they're professionals. They're given a decade of their professional life to getting this thing done.
I would ask
started in 2007, securing the rights and getting like, yeah. How many years do you want to work on something before, you know, as a creative person, before you want to go and tell this tale of America
of
if the fucking South won the Civil War? Like,
yeah.
That makes me immediately not want to reverse my defense of them. But
well,
do?
I mean, you got to ask yourself: have you ever had a job that you were less than satisfied with?
Right.
After a certain amount of time, every job when you started is exciting and new.
They change the requirements on you,
right?
Like, oh, yeah. You know, it's like your first day, hey, just adapt this work, and the next day it's like, okay, write a couple paragraphs. You're gonna have to pretty much come up with the final two seasons by here's six bullet points.
Right.
Hodor dies. Danny
Gendry
plus John
returns.
forever with a heart and kissy faces. Missandei and Grey Worm ? And Cersei's pregnant.
Yeah.
Finish the story.
Jesus, that sounds frightening.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Yeah. But what are you going to do? You got to pick yourself up from the mud of the Blackwater.
Yeah.
You got to shine up your armor and you got to get ready for next week because There's more dragons coming. I don't know.
There sure are.
All right. So if you'd like to send us feedback for the main podcast, you can do so, as always, at GameOfThrones@BaldMove.com. You can also go on our forums, forums.baldmove.com, where people are having discussions all over the place about Game of Thrones right now. You can join in on that. Follow along on all social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, /@BaldMove, where it makes respective sense.
Okay, all the ads, all the slashes. Yeah.
And we will see you Tuesday for the No Holds Barred recap feedback extravaganza. Until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
See ya. Hey, I want to tell you about the club before we go, club.baldmove.com. You might ask yourself, how can these guys get out 3 podcasts with Game of Thrones in addition to all the other podcasts they make at baldmove.com? Well, the answer is we do this for a full-time job, and we enjoy direct listener support. A way for you to transfer your dollars into listening enjoyment. And not only do you help keep the bits flowing around here, but you get a lot of stuff for yourself. There's ad-free feeds. There's tons of exclusive bonus video and audio content. Heck, you could have been watching us record this podcast on the video feed of the live recording. How can you get an instant take any more instanter than, I mean, unless you're Bran and you travel back into the time where Hodor got turned into... Hodor during the taping of a live podcast.
That's, you being Hodor in this situation,
right?
I would
be, yeah. Like, you know, like one of these days I'm going to not be able to say anything but Hodor. And it's going to really change the dynamics of the podcast.
By then that Photoshop or that Adobe audition plugin will be available and I'll just take your old words.
You can just translate it.
You can type
Stephen Hawking me.
Yeah.
All right, but until then, we need. See, that's where all this club money's going into the research necessary to make a artificial Aaron construct to survive the imminent Hodoring. I'm going to be who's Hodoring me? Is Bran?
No, it's an audience dimensions? Member.
Audience
it's,
members?
Yeah, yeah. It's a listener who decided they didn't want to sign up for the club.
It's coming through their ear pods into their iPods over the internet, and I'm going to get Hodored retrospectively. but in the meantime, you can go to club.baldmove.com and try to forestall that. I guess is the narrative fiction we're weaving here.
Set this up.
It's 5 bones a month. You either give it to us or you don't. Club.baldmove.com.